everybody. Welcome to Strength Depositions Podcast. We're at the world-famous Strength Depot Gym in Plymouth, Michigan. We have Jen, Rob, me, Mike's coming in, Shane's coming in, and we're sitting here with J.J. Thomas, who is the owner of Detroit Barbell. Detroit Barbell is located where, J.J.?
We're located in Brownstown, Michigan, just south of Metro Airport.
Well, J.J., thanks for coming in. We do appreciate your time. We had you on for a little bit with Tina's episode, just kind of like talking a real brief bit, but I'm glad that you're here. Thank you for coming in.
Yep, thanks for having me.
All right.
J.J., it's a pleasure to have you on, and this is probably the podcast I want to do most and that I'm the least prepared for, but we just got done lifting. Everyone walked in, but this is going to be a pleasure to do, and thank you for coming.
You guys go way back, so this won't be a problem.
I remember this is probably a 20-year relationship of brothers fight, love each other, fight, love each other, and I think I first met you at Rob's gym, and we were both getting into powerlifting at the time, and we had the old school crews there of just fucking animals training one day a week on Sundays, and I'm trying to get in with them and train with them, and I'm a spot bitch and with the Gallows, Urchecks, everyone, and here's this kid that comes in, and he doesn't need this fucking crew. He's got his own thing going on. He knows what the fuck he's doing, even though he started. Whether he did or didn't, he knows. And he wasn't going to take shit, and he's going to do fucking West Side. And it was like, West Side? What, you know?
You guys weren't doing West Side at the time, right?
We were doing squat, deadlift, and bench all in the same day over 6 hours. Here comes this kid with a box. And it was like, box? What are you doing squatting onto the box? And these older powerlifters are like, you know, oh, you're going to hurt your back, you're gonna this and that. That doesn't really work. You can imagine the bullshit that people say. And his numbers spoke for themselves, and it was awesome.
J.J., your very first meet, what was your total?
I squatted 610, I benched 335, and I pulled 530, or 540, one of those two.
How old were you at the time?
23. It's 2004. I did a meet March 2004, I did my first full power meet. I did a bench-only meet October of 2003. I bombed out at that one. Tried eating a bar a couple times on my face. And then I did a NASA meet in, like, 2000 or 2001. I didn't really know what powerlifting was. I just knew it was a squat, bench, and deadlift meet. So that was interesting, to say the least. I bombed out at that meet, too, because I didn't know you had to pause. I didn't know you couldn't use straps on the deadlift. I didn't know anything. Brand new.
How long I was
going to ask, what your weight class? What was your weight class?
Those couple meets, I was at 181. I don't even know. The NASA meet, I don't know. I think I was 181. I was like 175. And then the October meet, I was 181. And then the March meet, I was 181. I did one more meet after that. The next week, I did AAPF Nationals 2004 at 181. Then I just went up to 198.
So how did you start, J.J.? Like, what was the origin of you getting into powerlifting? I mean, like, if anybody who knows you in Michigan, or, I mean, people know you in the powerlifting scene. Everybody or every seminar I've ever talked to or been to, people have said, they asked me where I trained. I said, oh, I've trained at Strength Depot and Detroit Barbell. And they were like, oh, yeah, J.J. Thomas. So, like, how the fuck did this start? Like,
I think you're full of shit, number one, with that one. But I started lifting in high school for football. I was really skinny. I gained weight, did pretty decent at bench pressing, at least, at the time.
You were going to play for Eastern, too, weren't you?
Well, I tried walking out at Eastern, and then I had either lift or run. I couldn't really do both, and I had knee surgery. I just hit my knee scope. I don't have a lot of cartilage in my knees, so I chose lifting over running, thank God. And then,
best choice ever.
Yeah, best choice ever. I'm kidding. And then I started squatting more, deadlifting more. I always bench pressed. I did leg presses and just the basic bodybuilding type stuff. And then I found there's a sport called powerlifting, which is a squat, bench, and deadlift. And then I read every article Louis Simmons ever wrote at the time, like literally every single article that Louis wrote or Elite Fitness published. I knew them all by heart. I knew everyone's numbers by heart. That I don't even know who these people were, but I knew their numbers.
And hence the moniker Rain Man, who remembers numbers, dates, everything else, just an affinity for remembering shit over time. Everyone's number, I could lie about something. He'd be like, "Oh no, that's not right."
I'd be a barbell, and he'd go, "Well, didn't you pull that last week?" And honest to God, like he has a recall like nobody I've ever seen with numbers.
I used to. I don't remember stuff like I used to, but I used to remember everyone's PRs of pretty much every main lift, of no matter what it was, even in training, of my training partners at least, and people who were making numbers at the time, so the early 2000s, mid-2000s, late-2000s, stuff like that.
Would you say that you've kept your training consistent over the years using the same West Side, basically a West Side philosophy of training? Or you've came up with your own thought process on how things are going and what you are to do for yourself?
Yeah, I started out with like a West Side conjugate method because that's what I read was the best, and that's what I did, kind of, sort of. And like Rob said earlier, it was me, Rob, Doug, Carol, John Zeman squatting together, but we didn't really follow a West Side because we always wanted to see who had the biggest dicks and always go heavy on our speed day, which is stupid. So I never really did that properly, and then we'd have our max effort stuff, and I'd bench with Clay. And Clay Brandenburg is my business partner at Detroit Barbell, so I started benching with him. And that, we did our max effort work, and that I did speed work a little bit smarter, but I just never did the squatting and deadlifting properly. So I kind of do my own little method. I have a deadlift day, a squat day, a bench day, and then a accessory day where I do heavy shoulder presses now and lots of back work and tricep stuff. So
when you, like, so if you're not doing like just a standard West Side right now, are you doing like a linear periodization, like a 5-3-1, or how would you describe your training style?
I don't know. There's no good description. I follow, like, I vary my exercises like the conjugate method. I just don't have a speed day necessarily. So it's kind of like a West Side method.
Before you go on, I'm sorry to interrupt. Is that because we couldn't control ourselves? You couldn't control yourself to do the speed day properly, or you just found that it didn't apply to you as much, and you didn't get a lot of benefit from it?
I just never did it right. I mean, it's probably, I don't know, it's probably the best method if you can actually stick with it. But I was used to high effort percentages on speed day and max effort day. I would do too much volume because they know they work up to a max real quick, and I just never did it that way. So I mean, but I would call it more of a West Side type method. So I have a deadlift day. I vary my exercises. I pull off a deficit a lot. Bands, chains, all that shit, off blocks.
What's your best lift ever? Your best lifts at 198 and 220?
198. I've squatted 730. I'm sorry, 830. I squatted 830. I benched 565. And I pulled 705. And then at 220. I've done 843. I really only count a 600-pound bench. I did a 660, but the shirt was kind of cheating. It was a little cheater shirt. But anyways, so we'll call that 600. And then my deadlift is 715 at 220.
So the other lifts, you mentioned the shirt. Your other lifts were raw?
No.
Okay, right, yeah.
I do a lot of my training raw, and I've done a couple raw meets, but I'm not the biggest fan. It makes me too sore. But I've done
tell me, like the last time I asked you if you do anything raw, what do you normally say to that?
I don't know. Do I have a penis?
Yes.
No, I'm kidding. I do a ton of my training raw in off season, or you know, up to the 8 weeks before the meet, then I'll start throwing on my gear. But I've done a couple raw meets and it's fun. It's just different. So I'll do a raw meet in the next year or so, another one, and then a little bit of strongman stuff.
And you got a strongman meet coming up on September 30th, the Battle of the Borders, the one Shane Rickman's putting on in Ohio.
Yeah.
How's that coming?
I don't know. I haven't trained for it yet at all. I got a strongman contest, Michigan Strongest Man, that Aaron West is hosting at Frankenmuth August 5th. So I'm going to do that. I didn't have a whole lot of training, so I just got off a meet, Relentless Minnesota, for powerlifting, and I had gear on. So now I have to do a lot more raw training in the next 3 weeks, but... So I gave myself 3 training weeks for this strongman contest, and then I'll have about, I think, 7 or 8 weeks for the next contest, which I'll be more prepared for. But
so how'd you do in your meet? The meet you just had?
Shitty. We raised a lot of money. We raised
$185,000.
It'll probably be low 190s by the end of it. So we did a lot of good for a lot of families in the area, for Hope Kids and all around the country.
So JJ says shitty, but he got best lifter, by the way.
I was wondering, what would you change going into that meet? What would make you your best lifter that you could possibly be? What is it that is the hindrance of keeping you to be the best lifter you can be right now? Is it injuries? Is it technique?
Well, my shoulder's still messed up from an injury a couple years ago, so my bench sucks right now. Really bad, raw and equipped. I don't know. I expected to squat significantly more than I did, and I expected to pull a little bit more than I did, so those were both off. I'll take the squat because the judging was a little bit tighter than I'm used to, and I'm used to pretty strict judging in the gym and in meets, typical meets that I've done. But it was just more than I thought, which is fine. It was the same for everyone, but I'll take my squat. My bench, I expected more to, even though it sucked regardless. But, I mean, I benched 512, which is not good, but I'll take it for my shoulder being junk.
You know, I was going to ask you something. Congratulations on the best lifter, first of all. And do you still enjoy being a gym owner? Is it still – it's got to be a labor of love, first of all. But it also has to be a great amount of pride and frustration, as we can imagine and know. What is it that keeps you going all these years doing it?
Being a gym owner, if you're going to get into the gym owning industry, don't. It sucks. We make no money. At least the way we have Detroit Barbell set up, whatever. But it's a passion of mine, lifting. I have some really great gym members and training partners that make it worthwhile, but it just sucks walking into your gym when it's messy or and weights are out and shit's destroyed and broken and nobody says anything. But then again, I have some great members who I walked in the other day and sent a message out because the toilets were cleaned, and I don't remember the last time someone did that other than me. I mean, there are other people that do that, so I don't remember the last time it was.
Would you say it's a passion for still seeing your members get stronger?
I love seeing my training partners and people get stronger, everyone there. That's huge. I want to see everyone do as well as they can. Kind of pushes me.
Well, you know, like for those people who don't know JJ or Detroit Barbell, Detroit Barbell, like we said in the last podcast, was one of the very first warehouse gyms. Like, you have CrossFit now, and you have all these quote-unquote boxes everywhere. But when JJ started Detroit Barbell, JJ and Clay started Detroit Barbell, it's a big warehouse gym, but they weren't around back then. So how did that start, JJ? Like, how did Detroit Barbell start? How did you guys pick, like, the warehouse, like, aspect or scenario? And how was the inception?
We had kind of a falling out with the gym where we're training at.
I knew you were going to say that.
And Clay and I sat down with Tom Pierce, who had a ton of equipment. So this Detroit Barbell would have never happened without Tom Pierce. It could have happened without Clay, probably. It could have happened without, definitely could have happened without me. But it would not have happened without Tom Pierce. We owe him a lot, because most of it was his equipment that he let us borrow, essentially. So we had, I think 10 original members that left this particular gym, Rob being one of them, a handful of other great lifters, some of the best ever. And we decided we need to leave that gym, and we bought some equipment and chose around what area we kind of lived in, and we saw something really cheap, and it was 1,500 square foot to start off with. It was just a straight rectangular unit that went straight back, had a bathroom, a sink, and that's it. I mean, there wasn't nothing to it, a big sliding garage door, and we filled it up with equipment and some great lifters, and about a year and a half later, we upgraded to a 3,000 square foot building. We've been there since, 13 years ago or something. We started in November 26, 2004, we got our keys. So been around since then. We modeled our gym after Westside Barbell. They not only is a lot of the training and the equipment, but kind of how the gym was run. So that's kind of how we started and continued, I guess.
Not to get off the subject of your gym, are you enjoying doing strongman as much? Is it something that you could see yourself potentially doing in the future, or is it always going to be powerlifting for you?
It will always be powerlifting. Strongman's, it's a good change of pace. It's fun if I'm feeling beat up with all the gear and strong or powerlifting, but it's not nearly as fun for me. It's powerlifting is way more fun. I'd rather squat or try to squat 900 as opposed to lifting a 400 pound stone, which would be ridiculous. I'm not even close to that now, but I mean, it's always been powerlifting. It'll always be a passion.
Why do you think powerlifting appeals to you more than strongman?
I have no idea. I don't know. I have no idea. Maybe because it's the bigger weights. I don't know. I guess maybe the deadlift is not a bigger weights, but they squat more and all that good stuff. But I always went to meets when I was younger, and I always wanted to see the big weights. I don't care what gear you're wearing or not wearing. I just want to see the biggest weights pushed possible.
Is that because there's usually no bench in strongman?
No. I always joke around about the bench thing. My bench has never been good. I don't know how many guys in my gym that outbench me by a shit ton in the same weight class. Probably 5 or 6 at least that outbench me by a lot.
But you were always a 400-pound raw bencher at 198, which is extremely respectable for someone who does all the lift and a balanced lifter. You always had strength. You were always working it as hard as you could. I mean,
right. Yeah. It's always been a hard work. But, I mean, yeah, definitely. I always enjoyed bench pressing until we got in the shirts, and I kind of suck with the shirts really bad still. But it's always been fun. It's fun to learn how to do the equipment and all that good stuff. It makes it harder for me.
Do you see geared training coming back with, like, the documentary being released of West Side Barbell? Do you see geared lifting coming back? And two parts of that. In my opinion, if you're strong, you're strong. Whatever it is, I still love seeing it. I love seeing it. But I need a new challenge, and I'm too destroyed to have all that on my back. And forgot my second part of my question. If you just answered the first, that'd be great.
He'll remember it. Strong is strong. You're right. I just love seeing strong people. That's awesome. But, yes, I do see geared powerlifting coming back. I was just talking to someone the other day. We hosted meets, been hosting meets since, I think, 2006-ish. And I remember 2009 running a meet, our state meet. We had 60-something lifters. We had one raw lifter. One. There was no raw division. There's... Raw is, I would say, maybe 5, 6 years old, 7 years old, maybe. Or, I mean, 2010-ish, maybe. There was no such thing as raw back in the day. I sat and talked to one of the greatest lifters ever from the 80s and 90s, and he told us all the shit they used to do to cheat back in the day when they didn't have squat suits and stuff. They used to do some pretty amazing things to get more out of a really tight football jersey to get an extra 10 pounds on their bench or put tennis balls behind their knee wraps to squat 15 extra pounds. I mean, there's never been raw lifting until the last, let's say, 10 years. But I remember 2009 again, and I just hosted a meet in the last 2 years, and we had, I think, 3 equip lifters and 45 raw lifters. It's don't take this the wrong way, but raw lifting's easier to get strong at. I mean, you can continually progress to get stronger at. I think it's obviously definitely cheaper. You need a belt. And that's it. I mean, sorry, all you need is a belt and a singlet. You don't even need a belt, I guess, but a belt and a singlet. But and when I say it's easier, it's just hard to learn gear to squat in a squat suit and to bench in a bench shirt without help. You have to have help. Raw lifting you can do by yourself and still be successful.
It's almost like a team sport, like football. Right. Like, you know, like if you don't have a good team when you're geared, you're not going to be able to be a great geared lifter. But like being in Detroit Barbell with all those amazing lifters there, like some of the best on the planet, like, I mean, you had that where you could actually have that team, so.
Oh, yeah. All lifting. I even think raw lifting. You cannot be successful raw without having good training partners that are coaching you constantly. But you have to have it in gear. You need to have someone pull your squat suit up, put your straps up, pull your bench shirt in, give you handoffs. You don't have to, I guess, but it does help. It makes, you know, 99% of lifters better. But, yeah, you're right. You have to have good people around, and we may not be the strongest gym in the world anymore. We were the first gym in the world with 5 800-pound benchers before Westside Barbell, before any other gym. We have had, I think, 7 now. Timmy made 7. We have 6 gym members that were 800-pound benchers, and we made another one from another gym that come and train with us on the weekends. But we have a lot of very intelligent lifters with technique and coaching and all that good stuff. So that's what makes us a good gym.
Yesterday, I put Jen in. We were doing our training for our squat event at the Strongman meet coming up with the squat with the bumper plates and the axle and everything.
The tires, sorry.
And I put Jen in your briefs yesterday, and it was her in the briefs for the first time. Jen, what was like that like to go from being an elite-level strongman competitor to wearing gear? And did it change your opinion? You know, we look at gear and think to ourselves that these guys are being completely assisted or this or that, which is ridiculous. It's the hardest thing to possibly do or learn. It may not be pretty, but it is extremely, to me, in my humble opinion, it's extremely hard to do. What did you find from wearing that?
So it was really humbling. And I'll back that up. And I never thought that was like cheating. I never thought it was I never looked at it that way. I looked at it as like
just
a
raw
different
gospel.
Lift.
You know what? You know.
But I mean, just because I've been a raw lifter, but I didn't compete in powerlifting before. You know, I'm a strongman competitor. That's all I've been. So I never had that opinion on it. And I know enough people to know that it's sort of a different sport almost. So putting the briefs on was humbling because you have to change your. I had to change my my stance. I had to change the tempo on how I come down and then get back up.
Take a lot of energy getting in and out.
Well, for sure, yeah. Even just getting in the things. And mine, you said mine weren't even very tight.
No,
you know, so.
Not at all.
But they and they take your air. You know, you have to learn how to breathe differently and brace differently. And so what I ended up doing is I didn't put them on until comp weight, which isn't very heavy. My squat is only 275. So, and I just bombed, though, because I wasn't used to it. So I'm like, you know what I need to do? I need to drop the weight and I need to practice getting used to the gear. So that's what I did. And after a few sets, but I've wrapped my knees once and I actually liked what it did for my squat. So I'm looking forward to actually using that for the comp.
How about mentally? Did it create any anxiety of having to deal with it? An added stress factor to your lifting?
Well, the other thing is I don't like being dependent on anybody else. You know, like to JJ's point before about, you know, raw lifting you can do by yourself. A lot of strongman events I can do by myself. So being dependent on somebody to help me get in and out of them because they are tight, and you want them tight, you need them tight. I don't like being dependent on other people for that. But so that was a mental thing. But also, yeah, just learning it. But I'm excited to. To me, it's just another tool in the toolbox as a strength athlete.
JJ, you told me a couple weeks ago we were talking about depth, and we were talking about like you don't like to bullshit about depth. Like you told me we were talking about like squatting and stuff, and you said that you had you had training partners that were like yes men at one point. They were like, oh, yeah, that squat was deep enough. That's, you know, that bench was fine, blah, blah, blah. You paused. And I remember you telling me, yeah. Well, I remember you telling me, I don't fucking want people like that to tell me that. So JJ is known for being brutally honest in the gym, too.
And outside.
But to be honest, I mean, that's what you want when you're lifting. You don't want somebody to tell you that you're a great lifter and then you really fucking suck or you're not getting depth. So I always appreciated that, so... You've kind of always been known for that, but I mean, as a lifter, that's what I appreciate because I don't want anybody to coddle me. But you know, I don't know what's going on over there.
Some gay guy walking in. Corey Allen.
We are an inclusive gym.
We are an inclusive gym.
JJ, you said you've been promoting meat since 2006. Is that still a passion, or Corey's walking in? Is that still a passion, or what is that like to promote meats, and what makes you keep going on and on with it?
It is running meets is great because I get to see lifters, you know, do their best, and training partners, and clients, and my wife, and my daughter, all you know, compete. But it is a ginormous headache. It takes away a lot from my family. It takes away from my job, and if I don't work, if I'm not at work, I don't get paid. So that part is also difficult. But, I mean, it's great being there, just that, you know, the setting up, the couple days prior to setting up and having to weigh people in. So I take off all day Friday, essentially. I take off Saturday for the meet and sometimes Sunday to reset up shit. But that's usually handled. I mean, we have a handful of core gym members at Detroit Barbell that, I mean, I don't have to do shit half the time. I just say, you know what to do, and they handle their business. I mean, people have been around, like, Jake Waitley and Eric DeCaris and Tim Hensley and a bunch of other dummies that I've been training with for 12 or 13 years, and I don't even expect them to ask me at meets what should be done because they know, they just handle business. So I mean, it is a ginormous headache, but it's fun in the long run, and it's worth it sometimes.
Two things I've heard from this just talking to you and to have a gym and the difficulty and hardship and also pleasure it is in all the great things that come with owning a gym. But a lot of what you're doing is doing things for others. Putting on meets, the memories, this, all the great things that go with it, but also the personal hardship that goes on. And I've watched it for years of putting on a meet. So you're doing a lot of things for a lot of different people. Do you feel like that's giving a lot of yourself, your money, your family, and everything else. Help me with this. Well, how do you keep doing that, of giving yourself away? That would be hard. That would be that balance to me with...
To sustain that.
Yeah, exactly. That's...
It is difficult. I mean,
I've always wondered that with you.
Yeah, it takes a lot away from my wife. It takes a lot away from my daughter. So, yeah, it's really hard, and they have a hard time with it for every good reason, because, you know, I have to miss 2 or 3 days with them, and when Layla was younger, whatever, Beth would do almost all the work, and she'd have to find a babysitter or someone to watch her, because she was working and had to make money and all that good stuff. So, yeah, it is definitely a headache, but in the grand scheme of life, it's worth it, because I get to see a lot of my really good friends and training partners and clients and family members do really, really well and achieve personal accomplishments, and that makes me feel pretty good. So
I was going to ask you, so Beth, your wife Beth, is also an athlete. She competes. How do you guys manage that?
It's a lot. Yeah, she wakes up really early in the morning during the week to go train. I don't think she takes any days off a week ever. Very rare. So she'll go do her cardio or her accessory type stuff nowadays, the last couple years at least, on the weekdays, and then she'll lift at Strength Depot on her main lift days, whether she's doing strongman or powerlifting. She's by far a much better power lifter than I have ever been. So.
Accomplished.
Yeah, she. Yeah, she's one of
she's
the.
Like gear lifter as well,
she's
right?
Yeah, she's lifting primarily in gear. Well, all in gear, I guess. But I mean, she's got a pro total in 2 different weight classes in powerlifting, and she's put up some ridiculous numbers in the past. Yeah, I don't know, since day one. She's had an elite total since, I don't know, maybe her first meet or second meet ever. So that was a big deal. But an elite total back in the day when we first started lifting in the early 2000s was a big deal. They didn't have pro totals back then. So if you hit your elite, that was pretty cool. That was a big deal when you hit your elite.
Well, doesn't, like, you even have your daughter Layla. How old is Layla now, by the way?
Layla is 7.5. I don't know exactly. I was trying to think of this the other day, how many meets she has actually done. We don't ever make her lift. We don't ever make her compete. If she wants to do a meet, though, we make her train for it. Like, she kind of backed out of this last Relentless because she wasn't training, which is fine. We're all good with that. She still helped me and Beth raised a shit ton of money, but she's probably done, I don't know, 6 or 7 meets, mostly deadlift only, some push-pull. I think her best bench is 33 pounds, and I think her best deadlift is 99 pounds. So she's done very well. Now she's really not into training, so we don't make her train. She wants to do other things like gymnastics and swimming and dance.
I love seeing her here. She'll still come to the gym and hang out while you guys are training. You know, Beth is doing events and you're training clients or doing your own training. And she's just a great kid. Really good with adults, you know. So I think it's been, I don't know, I think it might be a good thing to have her around.
She says hi to me.
Yeah, most kids don't like Rob very much.
She's shy, but yeah, she's typically a really good kid. Especially when around other people. She's a great kid. And when she's at home, you know, she has her moments like all kids do. Yeah, all kids have their issues at home, you know, typically. And she's a great kid. She's a hard worker. She's very smart. She's really good at school, really good at piano.
I've never heard her complain while she's sitting here. I mean, maybe she does it quietly, but I've never heard her complain.
She does it quietly then, yeah. She does complain here and there, but we, you know, it sucks. I mean, that's the hard part about both Beth and I lifting is... And we don't lift together typically. One's helping each other. So we're here for hours upon hours upon hours. And, I mean, Beth commits more time, I think, to her training than I do. But she does it really early in the morning. So it doesn't affect her and Layla and her and I's time together, which is great. Which is more than I could ever do. Unfortunately, Beth is way less selfish than I am. I am way more selfish, unfortunately. I mean, I've had my set training times in days for the last, I don't know, 12 or 13 years, and that hasn't changed, and it sucks for my family sometimes. It really does. They're missing out on events, and I can't go out and get drunk the night before because I got to go train and all that good stuff, you know, but training's a priority in my life, so it's what it's going to be.
You're not much of a partier anyway, though.
I've been known to get really, really shit-faced. Nowadays I call it Relentless Drunk, so usually after Relentless Minnesota, which I did not this year, or Relentless Detroit, I get really, 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 really shit-faced. Because I'm trying to celebrate, you know, I want a little release, and I want to celebrate raising a shit ton of money. So.
Do you want to segue to Relentless?
Yeah, yeah. So, JJ, tell me about, like, tell me what Relentless is and how it started and, like, how you got started in it, because it's an amazing story and it's an amazing, like, program. Yeah.
So, Scott Nutter and Mike Hamilton started Relentless Minnesota. I don't remember the year. I think they've been going at it for 8 years, I believe. 7 or 8 years, I think. Don't quote me on that. I just asked Scott, too. I should remember that at the meet. But Tommy...
So much for being Rain Man.
Yeah, I don't have the memory anymore. It's the stupid kids. We're going to...
Stupid kids.
Tommy Westhoff, a gym member of our Detroit Barbell. He's no longer there because he moved for to better his family and get a good job out in Carolina for his... he's a police officer out there. He came to me and said, hey, what about running this meet, which used to be called the APF Wolverine Open, I want to say in 2012. I think this is our sixth Relentless Detroit. So I think 2012, I think he came to me and said, hey, I want to run this Relentless Detroit. Or can we run a meet as a fundraiser for a guy at his church? And I said, yeah, sure, I don't care. I mean, we make a little bit of money off these meets, but I'm not going to make a living running meets, unfortunately. I have a different job. I just don't have the time to put in those meets like that. But anyways, I said, yeah, sure, why not, you know? So he contacted Scott Nutter, I believe, if this goes correctly. He contacted Scott Nutter and or Mike Hamilton and said, hey, what do you guys do to make these meets? Because just seeing videos of Relentless Minnesota the year prior in March, I mean, the meet they put on was at a church. It was at, I believe, Apple Valley Church, and the setup was just unreal. Loud music, tons of kids on stage. A huge American flag. I mean, the biggest flag I've ever seen in my life that covers the whole stage. And then I said, yeah, I know. I saw videos like that. So he came to me and said, can we run this meet for this gentleman? I'm not going to say his last name, but James. And his son wasn't doing very well at the time, Austin. And we ended up raising, I think, $33,000-ish. So what we made the lifters do is if you wanted to have a fundraiser, you can, or you can pay the entry fee, if I remember correctly, how the first year went. So a lot of people raised a bunch of money. We had, I don't know, it was a 65-person meet, and we had it at Kirby Church in Flat Rock, which they were gracious enough to host us the last 6 years. And they're a huge part of Relentless now. I mean, they were from day one, but sorry, go ahead.
Back up, JJ, just for a second. Please tell everybody what Relentless is. Like, what is it? What exactly is this organization?
Why do we do it?
Why is it so important?
So there are two Relentlesses in the U.S., one, Relentless Minnesota and Relentless Detroit. Relentless Minnesota raises money for a foundation called Hope Kids, which is typically, it's a nonprofit company. It is typically a top five in the world for how much money they give back to these families. So they are a very giving organization. I want to say it was like 93-94% of the money they take in, they give back to the kids in the area. They put on different events for families in the area, for kids with potentially life-threatening illnesses, heart conditions, cancer, all kinds of different things. So Relentless Detroit, we stole their idea. Tommy stole their idea, which is great of them. I mean, because there's no better people to model it off after than Relentless Minnesota. And yeah, no, Mike. I mean, Mike and Scott are heroes of mine for what they do for giving back. I mean, they're unreal how much they give back and how much time they put into this. But Relentless Detroit is now an actual 501c3. There is a board of directors. I think there are 7 or 9 people on it now. They pick local families, mostly in southeastern Michigan, but in Michigan and a couple in Canada close, and they pick families to raise money for that need money. Most of these kids have potentially life-threatening illnesses. I can think of one family in particular, and one of the families this year, and all three of them, or 3 out of the 4 children have heart conditions, have open heart surgeries. Unfortunately, the mom's cancer had just come back too recently, so they are going through some real hard times, so it'd be pretty cool to raise a shit ton of money to give to the five, I believe we're picking 5 families this year, to give to 5 families this year. It'd be awesome to give them $30,000-$40,000 each, because we last year we raised $200,000. The last couple years, I think we've raised $200,000+ last 3 or 4 years. So hopefully we can do that again this year and give these families some money. And the Relentless Detroit Foundation is volunteers, so they give, they do hold some back, to give to other local families throughout the year, but they give, I'm just going to give an uneducated guess on numbers, but they give, I don't know, 90% of the money to these actual families to raise money for, and so it's a pretty amazing thing. They've paid for other kids' funerals and stuff, and so it's pretty cool.
Well, you know, like, I think what we plan on doing at Strength Depositions is maybe doing, like, maybe during Relentless or whatnot, I'd like to talk to some families. I'd like to, like, we were talking about maybe talking to some families, talking to some kids, getting them on the air, maybe putting a personal touch on Relentless, broadcasting it maybe before Relentless, and trying to raise some more money. Maybe however we can raise money, we'd like to do it. So if you have any ideas for us, please spit them out, because we're willing to help. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of local gyms, like Shane and Tina have hosted an event at least the last 3 or 4 years maybe. And I'm sure he's going to do something again this year and for fundraising, and everyone's doing these different fundraisers for Relentless. It's awesome. It's hard to just keep asking people for money over and over and over and over, you know, but it's a good way to be creative with it, with these different events they're doing, like a deadlift competition or a car wash or something weird like that, where a lemonade stand or somebody in Minnesota this year, a neighborhood, raised $1,500 by doing a garage sale, and they put all their money towards Relentless Minnesota and Hope Kids, and $1,500 is a lot of damn money to do off of a weekend garage sale. You know, it's pretty awesome, stuff like that, creative fundraisers.
So, like doing this, you've been doing this for a number of years now. How has it changed you, JJ? Like, how has it changed you as a person? How has seeing, like, kids that are going through obstacles that you and I will never understand, but you see them persevere in their strength and character and their strength of fucking everything, how has it changed you?
How has it changed your perspective with your own problems, your own children, your own family, your own, you know, everything?
Yeah, it's I mean, you look at these families that are going through hardships, and you whine and bitch about, oh, God, I paid the cable bill later. Oh, man, I can't get this filet. I better get a sirloin instead at a restaurant. We're a bunch of little bitches. I mean, seriously. I mean, my niece had a lot of medical problems. She's 16 now. She is, I mean, a list a mile long of medical problems. So I always saw what it was like having a child with special needs, and it's amazing what it can do to you. You get to know these families personally, and they, I mean, a bunch of them have been, you know, gym members. We let them come to the gym and train and do all that good stuff, and you get to know these kids. It's pretty awesome. I did not get a chance to talk to the first Relentless child very much, here and there, not very much, but I mean, I would consider his dad a friend. I mean, if he ever said, come over and help me out, I have no problem going over his house and help him out with whatever. He's part of our family now. He's part of our Relentless family, but he's part of our family now, regardless. And a lot of these young kids are, I mean, pretty amazing. Jacolas, I can think of one family that we're pretty close with. They have Super Wyatt had cancer, and he's cancer-free now, thank God. And his older brother, Zachary, and their family's just pretty awesome. There's a ton of amazing families that are involved in this, and so it's pretty awesome. You get to, you know, see what your couple thousand dollars you fundraise turns into, so...
That was one of the things that really impressed me about the organization. I just so when I met you, JJ, and Brad last October at a strongman competition in Wisconsin is when I first, I mean, I'd heard about Relentless. It has a great reputation, but that's when I started learning more about it. And the more I learned about it, and I actually came to Detroit in November to check it out. And what was really striking to me was that relationship that you're talking about. So many of the lifters developed this lasting relationship with these families. I mean, I know some people that are like godparents for children, and they, you know, they hang out, they spend birthdays together, they spend holidays together. I mean, it's such an amazing organization. Beyond just raising money, it's that, you know, it's the lifeline, it's the other support that you can give throughout the rest of the year.
Yeah, a lot of families, at least in Minnesota, and we do in Detroit too, but yeah. I mean, they thought of the hope thing, but I mean, that's what you bring to these families is hope, whether you raise a bunch of money for them or not. I mean, you're still bringing them hope, and you're bringing them relationships, and they're literally part of your family now. Like, I just got a text, I don't know, what it was, a couple months ago from a Relentless family, and hey, we're playing hockey around the area. They live about an hour away, and can you come watch us play hockey? And I mean, there's a couple other people that got the text too, but you know, it's pretty cool when they involve you in their family life too, you know? So, yeah, it is awesome.
So if people want to get, like people are listening right now, and they want to get involved with Relentless, and they want to maybe donate, or they maybe want to either go to the meet, or maybe fundraise themselves, how would they get the money to the children? How would they go about doing that? What can you give them some information on? Because I know we have some benevolent people out, you know, in that are listening. So if they want to contribute, what should they do?
Get a hold of, or in Detroit, get a hold of me or Darlene Delk. Or you can get on the Relentless, I think it's called Relentless Minnesota /Detroit Facebook page. Ask to join that page, and we'll add you on, and you can ask some questions there. That's the best place to do it, because you can get involved with Detroit and Minnesota. I know we're local here in Detroit, but we are all one big family, so they're part of it too. But or if you want to, if you're in the Minnesota area, or let's see, we're here. The Hope Kids is in Arizona, and Kansas City, and Colorado, and one more place. But you can look at Hope Kids if you wanted to, or contact Scott Nutter or Mike Hamilton about Relentless Minnesota. But I mean, yeah, you just the biggest thing I would say if someone wants to get involved is just come and watch.
The website is relentlesspowerlifting.com.
I don't think that works. Try that.
Did it?
Okay, Relentless Detroit, I believe, has a website. Okay, yeah, there you go. Relentlesspowerlifting.com. And RelentlessDetroit.com, I believe it is. But both of them, you can get in contact with somebody from Relentless, and we can get you pointed in the right direction. But just come to a meet. November 3rd and 4th in Detroit, not in Detroit, but at Flat Rock, Michigan, Kirby Church. It's $10 to get in. I believe you can have your child bring a non-perishable good to get in. That's how we typically do it. Probably, like I said, $10 to get in. Come and watch the event, and then you can see what we're really all about. Or if you're in Minnesota in the, you know, usually the first or second week of July, come there. And I'm assuming it's going to be at Apple Valley Church or Apple Valley East High School, I think it was this year.
Yep.
Apple Valley East, something like that. I don't know. Anyways, but it's somewhere in Apple Valley-ish area in Minnesota. Come in, you know, first or second week of July. They put on an amazing show. It is a show. It is a powerlifting meet. I don't even know if I said that earlier, but it's a powerlifting meet. So, but we raise a shit ton of money for these kids. But I mean, it's a legit powerlifting meet. The UPA and Bill Carpenter back us 100%. Bill Carpenter at the UPA usually gives. So you pay a sanction fee to lift these meets. It's $30 usually, or $15 for a team. And Bill Carpenter gives back $5 of every one of those cards back to Relentless throughout the whole year. So he gives a shit ton of what would be his own money or the company's money back to Relentless. So it's pretty amazing that we're involved with them too, luckily enough. So
Jen, you lifted in the Relentless meet in Minnesota, right? Okay, so tell me about your experience with it, and tell me about, like, I mean, just tell me about it.
So like I said, I went to Detroit in November to check it out, and it was really impactful. And so I got to know more of the people involved in Relentless, and then met Scott Nutter at a fundraiser for Justin Sager, who is involved in Relentless. So the Relentless family extends beyond, you know, the families and the lifters. All the lifters are also a family. So when one of our own, you know, needs something, everybody pitches in. So Justin's dealing with cancer, so we had a fundraiser for him in Illinois, so went to that and met Scott Nutter, and he asked if I wanted to lift, and I'm not a power lifter, I think I said that already, but I said I would be involved. And actually, when I first heard about Relentless, like I said, I've known about it for a couple of years, and I thought, I have zero interest in powerlifting, competing in powerlifting, but if I was ever asked, that would be the only thing I would do. So I was asked. I was a little apprehensive. So we decided I would do deadlift only. Training wasn't great or whatever. So we had a kickoff in Minnesota in April, and that's where they have the families that are involved in the organization come to this kickoff. And it was a really great experience, too. There were demos, so there were strongman demos, there were you know, max deadlift demos, there were, what else, arm wrestling, all sorts of things. It was a day-long event. So all the kids are up there. A lot of the lifters dress up in costumes. It's really fun for the kids and families. And that's where lifters are paired with families. my family, which is it's unfortunate, so I'm not probably the best person to talk about this because my experience wasn't normal. Unfortunately, my family and I never connected. I reached out to them, and I never heard back from them. So I tried getting a hold of them a couple of times over the months. Probably four times I tried emailing them. They didn't come to the kickoff, which is not unusual, I guess. And then at the meet on the 7th and 8th, they weren't able to make it to that. So I'm not quite sure what happened.
Maybe what they were going through was just too overpowering to even deal with.
Sure. You know, life happens to all of us. And in this case, you know, obviously that's a little, yeah, that's a little more.
I can't imagine.
So I didn't have the full experience. So I competed. I didn't do as well as I'd hoped. I mean, again, it was my first powerlifting meet. I know what I did wrong now, you know, as far as prep and everything. But just being there, and that's not really, to me, like, I didn't go into it wanting, you know, this is going to be the best lift ever. It's about the whole experience. It's about raising money for these families. It's about being together. So that, you know, I count the weekend as a really successful weekend, you know, and it was a great time, and it was good.
So, JJ, your career now, not only are you a gym owner, and not only are you, like, you know, somebody that's, you know, trying to raise money and charitable and, you know,
philanthropist.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. No, you laugh, but that's true. I mean, like, I don't know, really know anybody that does more for kids.
It just occurred to me of how much of yourself that it has not, well, let me take that back. It wasn't the first time I've thought this, but how much you give to others, you know, that's, I'm in awe. Listening to these stories.
And what's funny, too, is, like I said, if you know JJ, I've known JJ for a while, and, like, he comes across being brash and, like, you know, very opinionated, and he'll say what he feels. There's no pretentiousness in him, but heart of fucking gold. And the things that you do for kids, man, I mean, people, and you do it out of your kindness of your heart. You're not doing it for anything that you're trying to get back. And, I mean, that says a lot about your character, man. I mean,
this is your career, too. As a trainer, and how far this has became, and to watch that grow, to be an outsider watching this with a couple clients and hustling this, and to now you are one of the top trainers in the state of who people want to go to, and your reputation is spoken very highly, obviously, in this community.
And the other thing, too, real quick, JJ, is, like, I mean, I know that you train a lot of people, and like, if somebody wants to get trained by you, if somebody wants to, like, get in contact with you...
They gotta have some thick skin.
Absolutely. But...
they gotta be willing to work.
But JJ will train somebody from, like, you know, 10 years old, 8 years old, 7 years old, to, like, I mean, what's the oldest person that you've trained?
That one guy in the mafia that you've trained.
I trained a guy at Lifetime when I was... I started off at Lifetime Fitness, I don't know how many years ago, 2005-ish. Then I went for another gym, and then I'm finally in a gym where I'm happy all the time. There's not a time I'm here and I bitch about, other than Rob leaving his shit out. I'm kidding. No, this is a great place. I mean, the owners are great. Shane and Tina, if you say, hey, why don't we get a new bar or something? How about a new this? Fuck, I have no problem spending money. I mean, it's very rare you find a gym owner to do it, because I don't do that. I ain't going to spend a bunch of money at the gym.
Well, you talked before about not making any money as a gym owner. They reinvest every cent back into this gym.
Oh, yeah. I'm not going to throw out their business, but I'm assuming they're not doing poorly. I'm sure they make money every month, and they pump that shit right back into the gym. We have stones of steel that are $700+ per stone, which is just fucking ridiculous, but they are not afraid to spend money to put money in this gym, because they both have full-time jobs, and it's a passion of theirs, and it's pretty awesome to have gym owners that will do that. I mean, yeah. Pretty cool.
If this was my vocation, I can't imagine a better place to come to work every day.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You
yeah.
get to come here.
Yeah, I mean, other than the air that Tina promised us, since she's full of shit.
No, I'm kidding.
We have fans. No, I'm kidding. I don't expect to have air in a gym, at a real gym at least. No, I can't. I have had literally zero complaints about coming to this gym. It's been the best career move I've ever made. I'm busier than I've been, and I could always use more clients, but I mean, I've never been busier, and I love my job, and my clients are awesome, and they work their ass off, and it's great to see when they're successful.
So if somebody wants to get in contact with you and wants to, like, if somebody wants to get in contact with you to train them, how would they do that, JJ?
Just look up, I don't know, my phone, look up Detroit Barbell, because that's my email's under there, or look up my name on Facebook, maybe, or I do have a cell phone, too.
Do you want to get it,
though? My cell phone is 734-642-7877, or on Facebook, it's jeremy.jj.thomas, and you can just get a hold of me there if it's what you're interested in. I've trained people from, I've had a couple pro athletes, not a lot, a couple good high school athletes and college athletes, and up to people that are have no interest in competing ever in their life and they just want to stay healthy. I've trained at least 10 hip replacements before, after, during, shoulder surgeries and knee replacements. And I mean, I am not the smartest. I think I steal from the best. I steal all my ideas. I think of nothing. And but I mean, I steal from the best. So I mean,
not someone that overcomplicates things, and that's
so people are not gonna.
So, Tina, the co-owner of Strength Depot, she trained with you leading up to U.S. Strongman Nationals, and how did she do?
She did good. She took second in the Masters.
She did.
She, I'm trying to think if she could she have done better? She did pretty good. I mean, she did very well.
She did really
you
well.
Be you.
I expect perfection out of myself, and I expect perfection out of my clients and my training partners and my wife. And I mean, a couple slip ups here and there between the people I was helping at Nationals, but I mean, they all did pretty fucking crew. I mean, Beth did great. She had one little slip up in the stones. Other than that, she had four perfect events.
Aaron and Stephanie
did great. Tina did great. Even the guys did really well as a whole. Not that I'm coaching them, but I was just there trying to scream at them or yell at them or slap them in the face.
But everyone's looking to you for guidance, whether they're your client or not. Everyone's, you know.
I wouldn't say everyone. There are people that were asking me, though, and I have no problem trying to get these people better. I have no problem with that.
So here's an example of what JJ does. So it was local, about a half hour from here, luckily. Nats was here. What did JJ do? He brought our own equipment to the building so our athletes could have their own warm-up area so they didn't have to share with everyone else, which is, I mean, doesn't... Nobody said you couldn't do it, but JJ thought of that. He thought of, like, taking care of our athletes. And I think that's huge. I mean, like Rob said, you're always thinking of other people and how you can make people better and help people get better. And, you know, we let other people work in, but our athletes came first.
I mean, we had a really big helper, Dan Mackey, and his wife Crystal was competing, but Dan is a fucking ginormous dude, and I did a couple people, but Dan told 99% of people, hey, sorry, this is our stuff. You can work in, but our girls and guys, mostly girls, had priority over everyone. So, sorry. But, I mean, yeah, I did think of it, but, I mean, everyone was like, hey, how are we going to warm up? And I said, don't worry, we'll handle it. We'll bring our own stuff because it was close, and might as well have your own equipment there. It's the same equipment we use on a platform, so why not use it?
All right, JJ, I can't tell you how much we appreciate you coming in. I know you have a client, so we're gonna let you go. But I can't tell you how much I appreciate, like, you coming in and talking to us. I can't tell you how much I appreciate over the years all the help you've given me personally. And just by even yelling at somebody else, I got better because of it. So I didn't know how to bench press or do anything before I came to Detroit Barbell. And you were, like, instrumental in teaching me all of that. And Rob and everybody else in Detroit Barbell. I learned more in a year in Detroit Barbell than I learned in probably 28 years lifting. So, and that's a testament to you. And I thank you very much for just coming in. And, you know, it's just an absolute pleasure, man. So.
It was a pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, man. We appreciate it so much.
When are we going to do that squat that I've been begging for, the seminar?
Yeah. When we figure out,
I have
we
to beg?
Sit down
do
and
I
figure out a day and time.
Well, we're going to probably do a squat seminar with JJ, Rob, myself, a couple other people. We're going to try and, like, you know, open it up, PDFs, maybe like some PowerPoint, maybe some video even, and we're going to try and do that at Strength Depot. So for everybody, for Jen and Rob and
I gotta go.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for having me.
Jen, Rob, JJ, everybody else, thanks so much for listening, and we'll get back to you.
Voices Radio Network.